Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. My name is Jacob Avila, and I'm joined today by Michael Pratz.
What's up?
So the article that I'm going to talk about today is entitled Ultrasound Guided Interscalene Nerve Block versus Procedural Sedation by Propofol and Fentanyl for Anterior Shoulder Dislocations. And that's in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine. And it was published very recently in March of 2017. So this study was kind of interesting, and it's something that I am personally invested in just because I use it a lot and I see that it works really well. So basically, they were just trying to compare the two modalities, procedural sedation versus nerve block. They randomized 60 patients, and this was done in Iran, who presented with anterior shoulder dislocations, and they randomized one group to get the procedural sedation, which was defined as fentanyl and propofol, and the other group to get an ultrasound-guided interscalene block using lidocaine and epi. So it's kind of randomized the two. So they had a couple of exclusions. You know, if you couldn't take the drugs, you know, they exclude them, obviously. They don't want to cause anaphylaxis for the sake of the study. They also state one of their exclusions was patients not potentially assignable to both groups because of an underlying medical condition, if they had any kind of neurovascular compromise to the shoulder, or if they had fractures or they refused to study. So it was everybody else. So this is your stable, normal patient. So not everybody got pain medicine before the block, and it was only if like they really needed it, they got some. Like if they were unable to like move basically because of their pain, that's when they actually got some pain medicine before. And so some of them did, some they didn't. As far as the nerve block itself, it seems like the guys who did it were actually pretty well experienced. They included some two attendings that had one full year of experience doing these blocks, with at least one weekly nerve block performed during this period.
I was going to say very experienced.
Yeah, right. I mean, I would say that's at least 52 of these things minimum, right? So I mean, these are a good amount of blocks, at least as far as like ER doctors go. And they put about 15 to 25 mLs of their fluid when they're doing the interscalene blocks. As far as the reduction techniques themselves, they have residents there. So what they did is they had the resident try the Lidl-Meyer technique. If you don't know what that is, just Google it. So they tried that once with the resident. If that didn't work, then they tried it with the attending. And then if that didn't work, they moved on to the Milch maneuver. And then the kind of rescue maneuver would be a traction, counter-traction maneuver, which is literally my least favorite way to shoulder, you know, reduce. But apparently they got everybody in with those. So that's techniques. What did they find, Mike?
You don't like doing the tug of war with the person's arm and someone else?
No, I don't at all. I also don't like increasing the risk of them having Hill-Sachs deformities.
Well, you know you can find those on ultrasound.
Yeah, that's right. You can. That'll be for the next one.
All
right,
so let's talk about the results. Like Jacob said, 60 patients enrolled. These are your typical people who are going to dislocate their shoulders. Young men. 97% men, mean age 28.7. 83% of this was not their first rodeo. They had dislocated their shoulder before. So primary outcomes, talking about the length of stay, keeping in mind this was measured from the time they started whatever intervention they got, so either their interscalene nerve block or their procedural sedation. So it wasn't their total ED time, it was from start of procedure to discharge. Procedural sedation group had a mean length of stay of 108.6 minutes. Interscalene group had 80.2 minutes. So that saves you about half an hour. As far as their pain scores, in the procedural sedation group, they did really well with the pain score 0.38. Interscalene brachial plexus block was 3.43 for their pain scores. And we can talk about that a little bit later. As far as some of their other secondary outcomes, they were looking at overall satisfaction that the patient had with the procedure. Procedural sedation had a satisfaction on the scale of 3.6, and interscalene block had a satisfaction of 3.0. In both groups, there was no significant difference in the number of attempts or the number of techniques that they ended up using. Now, another thing that we're interested in this population is the side effects, right? Because one of the main reasons that people advocate for interscalene nerve blocks is because you don't get the side effects of procedural sedation, such as patients going apneic or having laryngospasm or other bad things happen to them. Well, in this side effect category. Procedural sedation did have a drop in blood pressure of about 12 millimeters of mercury, and three patients that had hypoventilation, but those were all transient, nothing major. In the interscalene group, one patient developed body numbness and tongue paresthesias, which also was transient, and there was no other major effects.
What does it feel like to have like your whole body be numb?
Sounds uncomfortable, I will say that.
Actually, does it?
Unless your whole body is in pain first, in which case you might experience a lot of relief.
Yeah, exactly. Because like you would be unable to have any pain whatsoever.
Yeah, but I guess what they're worried about in that case is local anesthetic systemic toxicity. And you know, some of the signs, if you're doing these large volume blocks, that patients develop those would-be kind of perioral paresthesias or tongue tingling, numbness, anything of that variety might make you a little bit worried. What do you think of these results, Jacob? Are you convinced? I mean, which way are you leaning here?
So, I mean, if you just look at this from just, you know, basically what the results section says, it looks like procedural sedation has a few more advantages than the interscalene block. But, I mean, a couple of caveat-y things in here. So the patient satisfaction score goes from a scale of like 1 to 4. So the group that got the nerve block was 3, and the group that got the procedural sedation was 3.6. And I know that's statistically significant, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal to me. And then their pain score was from 0 or 1 to 10, and it was 3.4 with the ultrasound group and then 0.38 with the procedural sedation group. I don't know. Pain score of 3 out of 10, like, to me, that's like, here, take a Tylenol, you're going to be fine. Like, I don't really think that's that big of a deal. And additionally, they even kind of talk about it. They said the populations might be different. I'm going to quote from their article here. First, patients' apprehension during an awake procedure may be different in two populations with different cultures, leading to less satisfaction with nerve blocks. And I'm wondering if this had something to do with it, because when I do these blocks with patients, and I don't know, one every like 2 to 3 shifts, my patients are so stoked that they got this procedure. They're like super excited about it. They always say how it's amazing how they have no pain. I don't know, like, if we did the same exact study here, I don't know if we'd have the same issues with the pain score. Additionally, there's a bunch of other stuff. For instance, my total length of stay in the ER is significantly less when I don't do procedural sedation. So the time when they get triaged until the time of discharge, that is a huge difference when I have to do procedural sedation, because you have to get all the supplies, you have to make sure the nurses are there, make sure that all the pieces of the puzzle are in place. Versus when I do the nerve block, I basically get a tech to push the syringe, because I usually have the tubing attached to my needle. And that is the only help I need. Everything else I do, the reduction is a very easy one-person technique, and I watch them for a little bit and then I send them out. So I think that there's some variables here that they don't necessarily consider. And I think if you just look at this at face value, you might be reluctant to do a procedure that is probably superior to procedural sedation.
Those are all good points, Jacob. And you know, one thing that I want our listeners to consider is that the possibility you might be very biased in the favor of nerve blocks and not have clear interpretation of the data.
No, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, I did my first interscalene block in fellowship. So I did all of residency with procedural sedation, like all of residency. I never did one interscalene block. Then I started doing them in fellowship. And yeah, I mean, I'm probably biased. I mean, that's of course, definitely very probable. But I also have like seen this work so well. And it's not necessarily 100% consistent with the other studies that have come out, even though all the studies have been pretty small numbers.
I'm totally with you. I was the same way. I trained doing these procedural sedation, and then only after fellowship and during fellowship started doing the interscalene blocks for them. I agree with you. It's very effective and it's great for the patients. I'm somewhat surprised that the pain scores were worse, because in my experience, the patients have been pretty much pain-free because you've numbed their whole shoulder up. So I'm a little curious how that came to be. And secondly, I think that with the length of stay, there's a component here that they didn't actually test that's been evaluated in prior literature on this topic, where they are looking at how much single provider time. Like you alluded to, in this case, procedural sedations takes up a lot of people's time. So the nurse is usually there documenting vital signs for, you know, an hour or something afterwards, mm-hmm. and at least until the patient comes back to their normal mental status. Whereas here, if it's just you and one other person, or even possibly just you doing the nerve block, that can really decrease the time of single provider time needed. I think some limitations to this study, it was just a convenient sample, and they even noticed that they missed 83 patients with dislocations that otherwise could have been enrolled in the study if someone had been there to enroll them. So that's a big chunk of patients. Secondly, the authors stated that they used a lower dose of lidocaine than some other people would have used. I kind of think that what they reported was pretty reasonable dose.
It was 15 to 25, and that is good. The first couple of times that I did this block, I used like 10 to 15, and like I was like 0 for 3, and I started using 30 cc's consistently, sometimes more than 30, and that's when I've had like the zero pain scores.
Right, and the alternative to that is instead of doubling your volume is you could also just use 2% lidocaine, and some people have advocated for using 2% as long as you're careful to not overdo the max dose for your patient's weight.
Yeah, and additionally, you can do the 1% and then dilute it. So if you only want to do 15 mLs, do 15 mLs with 15 mLs of, you know, sterile water or normal saline or something like that. Because I think, and I don't know, I'm not that researched in this, but I think that volume actually matters more than concentration of lidocaine, because you want to make sure that the entire circumferential area of those nerves are actually bathed to maximize your analgesia.
You want to give it a good scrub down in the bath.
Exactly.
All right, so let me give you some take-home points. So this study was a great randomized control trial, although it was a convenient sample. They ended up enrolling 60 patients. Half of them got interscalene nerve blocks. Half of them got procedural sedation for their shoulder dislocations. The outcomes were that the procedural sedation group had longer length of stay. The procedural sedation group had lower pain scales and slightly better satisfaction. There was no statistically significant difference in the number of attempts or techniques, and there was minimal side effects in both groups. So my take-home points are that interscalene blocks can lead to decreased length of stay, and you have to figure out if it's going to be worth the possibility of having somewhat worse pain and satisfaction. But that may also be based on how you do the blocks and your patient population to begin with. I think that this does say that doing shoulder dislocations this way is fairly safe, as they had very few side effects, so maybe that would encourage people to give this a try. We thank the authors for their study, and thank you for listening in. Again, I want to remind you that you can visit our website, ultrasoundgel.org, visit us on iTunes, give us a good rating, or contact us online through Twitter or email. Happy to talk to you. Bye.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel, more
ultrasound gel podcast.